I was chatting with somebody, nobody related to the church, and I'd just gone to the grocery store. You know how expensive things have gotten. And I was lamenting to them about my grocery bill. And they said to me, you know, the service I got at that restaurant was awful. I'm going, what? Where did that come from? How does the one comment connect with the response I got? Have you ever had that experience before? You're talking about one thing, and someone responds to you with something completely unrelated? In Latin, it's called a non sequitur, doesn't follow in sequence. We sometimes use the word germane in English. It's not relevant, not fitting, not on topic. One of the more interesting debates in New Testament scholarship today is whether Jesus spoke Greek. Am I on topic or not, right? Is this germane? Is this germane to your life? Do you really care if Jesus spoke Greek or not? Probably not, but it does have some influence on our Christian faith and on the study of the New Testament. See, Jesus spoke Aramaic. Aramaic was his first language. And the question of whether he spoke Greek is a matter of translation, because we have to answer a basic question. People are going to ask you this if they want to know more about the Christian faith. How can you be confident that what Jesus spoke in Aramaic got translated well into Greek? See, Greek was the international language of the Mediterranean world, and Aramaic was just this language that lived in a certain part of the Roman Empire. How do we know that what Jesus taught in Aramaic, how do we know the stories that were first remembered about him in Aramaic got translated correctly into the Greek of the New Testament? So it sort of does matter to us whether Jesus spoke Greek or not. And whether he taught in Greek too. Not that only that he spoke it, but that maybe he taught his lessons sometimes in Aramaic and sometimes in Greek. That would be a great assistance for us to know this, because it would provide insight to us about the question of translation at the very beginning of Christianity. Maybe it began with Jesus and those first disciples too. You know, they got insight from Jesus about how to translate his teachings and his life from Aramaic into Greek, because it was there all along with Jesus from the very beginning. And scholarship has actually moved on this. 50 years ago, most scholars would have said Jesus probably didn't know any Greek, and he certainly didn't teach in it at all. But today, scholars are now more and more inclined to think that Jesus did speak Greek, and he very likely could have taught in Greek as well. Even if Aramaic was his first language, he was bilingual in nature. And not only Jesus, but his first disciples too, Peter and Andrew, James and John, they lived in the world of Galilee. Galilee was a world mixed with Gentiles and Jews, Greek-speaking and Aramaic-speaking people living alongside each other. In fact, the name Andrew is a Greek name. Peter had two names, Kephas, the Aramaic version of stone or rock, and Petros, the Greek word for stone or rock. He lived by both names. He had a bilingual existence. Jesus was a technon. Technon means tradesman. He was a tradesman. He was a tradesman for most of his adult life. You know, if he became a tradesman around 15, he worked from 15 to 30 as a technon. We hear it translated as a carpenter, but in Galilee, there aren't many trees. There aren't any trees today, and there weren't many trees back in Jesus' day, but lots of stone, lots of stone. A technon can mean a carpenter, but it can also mean a stonemason. And I think most scholars today think that Jesus was probably a stonemason, not a carpenter. And if you're a tradesman, you go where the work is. Just a basic fact of being a tradesman. And that means Jesus probably went where the work was, and that meant into Greek cities and Greek communities. And he needed to know Greek in order to converse with clients and contractors. Peter, Andrew, James, and John grew up and lived in a world riddled with a bilingual need. As fishermen, they would have sold their fish to both Greek-speaking people and Aramaic-speaking people. Greek-speaking business people and Aramaic-speaking business people. And being bilingual would have been a natural feature of their life. And the earliest Christian church was almost certainly a bilingual community, where translation between two very different languages was a common feature of their life together. And that means when the Gospels were written a generation later, there was already a strong tradition of translation at work in the life of the church. The church knew how to translate Jesus from Aramaic into Greek. The Gospel writers knew how to go about this because he had showed them this fact from the very beginning. He showed them how to do it from the very beginning. And they also grew up in a world where people translated back and forth all the time, inside and outside the church. And one of the reasons Christianity has been so successful as a religion is because of the habit of translation. Christianity is very easy to translate from one culture into another, from one language into another language, from Aramaic to Greek, then into Latin, the other great language of the Roman Empire, from Latin to French and Spanish to German, Russian, English, now into Cree. The Bible has been translated into 800 or more languages. 800 languages. A big difference between Christianity and Islam is that in Islam, the Quran is only considered to be the Quran if it's in Arabic. A translated copy of the Quran in another language like English or French or Cree is not considered to be the Quran. But the Bible is considered to be the Bible no matter what language it has been translated in. It's still the Bible. Whether it's Cree or whether it's Swahili or whether it's Russian, it's still the Bible. And this easy and open approach to translation that's part of our Christian heritage, part of our Christian tradition, goes right back to Jesus himself and his first disciples. They set a template for us as a church that's been at work in our tradition for almost 2,000 years. Translation is putting something into your own words, taking something from one language and putting it into another language. Trillium is a Protestant church. That means our lineage traces right back to the Reformation of Martin Luther back in 1517. What's the Reformation really about? What's it really about? There's lots of theology and philosophy and study of the church, but at its very core, the issue at stake in the Reformation is the translation of the gospel into languages that people can understand. That's what the real argument was about. People wanted to be able to go to church and worship in their own language. They wanted to hear the scripture read in their own language. Some people wanted to read the Bible in their own language. We call it the vernacular, in their own vernacular. But up to that point in 1517, the church in Western and Central Europe was done exclusively in Latin. People went to church every Sunday and they couldn't understand the Mass because they didn't speak Latin. They didn't read Latin. They didn't hear Latin and understand it at all. And they wanted the Mass translated into Latin in their own language so they could participate in the Mass and in the worship experience. But the Roman Catholic hierarchy refused to do this. And that's the fuel that gave rise to the Reformation. Translation is part of our heritage here at Trillium for many reasons. And for the month of July, we're looking at about how to talk about what I believe. And the Sunday services are meant to dovetail with the Tuesday night program that we're running as well about the same topic. And many people struggle to share their faith with others, and others could include their spouse, their parents, siblings, friends, neighbors, work colleagues, schoolmates, even strangers. And there are many reasons for why we struggle with this. There's some good reasons, many good reasons why we struggle in sharing what we believe with other people. I think one thing that holds us back in a big way is the question of authority. By what authority do I share what I believe with another person? Who am I to impose my beliefs on another human being? I think that's a fair question. Today, to have faith in God seems to be somewhat countercultural. That's a rapid change in our culture in the last 60 years. We're definitely running against the culture today. You're actually a rebel coming to church on a Sunday morning. You're the exception to the rule today in our culture. And I think we feel this sense of precariousness that we're running against the culture and we're concerned that we might run into disdain or scorn from others if we were to share with them our belief in God or our willingness to follow Jesus. I think the big reason, though, that we really hesitate, maybe for some of us at least, is that we lack the language to express what we believe. In fact, in many cases, we might not even be absolutely certain what it is we believe. You know, there are different levels of knowing in life. You know things at different levels. I think our first level of knowing about something, knowing how to do something, is that level of intuition, that sense of just having a feeling for it. But to put it into words, to put something into words, that's a higher level of understanding. That takes a deeper level of understanding, taking what we intuitively know and put it into words. And I think this is especially true when we're dealing with something like God, the mystery of ultimate mysteries, or Jesus, or this Holy Spirit. The life of God is a mysterious thing at best. And there always are elements of doubt in what we do when we go about following God or trying to live out a godly life. There's always doubt in that. So no wonder we struggle. You know, the church came up with creeds. We just read one today. There are lots of creeds in the church's history. They give average people like you and me a basic language to talk about our faith. That's what their job is. That's why creeds exist. Creeds themselves are kind of a translation work. They take themes from the Bible and they put it down into a formulaic presentation to give to us so that we can learn the language of faith and describe and talk about what it is we believe intuitively. There was a time when creeds were a big deal in the church. They were a big deal. But today, not so much, at least not in the United Church. But I think this could be to our detriment. As I say, they are the fuel, at least part of the fuel that gives us language to speak about what it is we believe. They're the tools that put into practice and into form what our intuitions say to us. Now, I can guarantee you that even if you knew the Apostles' Creed by heart, and I do know the Apostles' Creed by heart, or if you knew the United Church Creed or any other creed by heart, you'd still likely struggle to share your faith with others. You see, there's another level of translation that needs to go on in our lives today if we want to be effective in sharing what we believe with other people. And that is, we have to take the faith, the biblical understanding, the sharing of faith that comes in the creeds, and we got to be able to put it into our own language. We have to translate it into our own words. See, it's a matter of translation. It's been a matter of translation from the very beginning, when Jesus taught and spoke in Aramaic and Greek, when the early church grappled with sharing the gospel with people in different languages. It's a matter of translation for us today. Translation is about putting something into your own language, taking something from one language and putting it into another. And that can happen even in the same language. I experience this when I go to the doctor's office. Have you had this experience? And they start talking to you in medical ease. They start talking to you in medical jargon. Any of you ever stop your doctor or the nurse or the physiotherapist or whoever and say, can you just explain it to me in English? Yes, I know they're speaking English technically, but I can't understand them. And I now, as they say, often ask them to translate it for me into English, everyday English. Just lay it out for me in ways that I can understand. And I do this with people in so many different fields. You talk to a lawyer, talk to me in English, please. You deal with a technologist or a technology professional, speak to me in English. I even do that with my auto mechanic. Speak to me in English, please. Broke, fix. I can understand that, right? A big issue in sharing one's faith with others is talking about what I believe in a way that comes from a translation that's already taken effect in me. You know, you've already translated the material. So we have a translation challenge before us. We have to translate the basic teachings of the Christian faith that we hear about every Sunday into our own words. And until we do that, we likely won't have anything to say to anyone, really. Why would we? And, you know, and people have gone to church their whole life and they still can't articulate their faith. And that means they can't put their faith into their own words. And it's not their fault. If you feel that way about your life in the church and you've been in the church for decades and you can't articulate your faith, it's not your fault. No one told you you needed to do it. But you do need to do it if you want to grow in what it means to follow Christ. I handed out a worksheet. It's a worksheet similar to what we did on Tuesday night. Anybody need a copy? Do you have a worksheet with you? Put up your hand if you don't have a worksheet. Do you have a worksheet? No? Do you want to put your hand up so we can give you one? Come on, be brave. Be brave. Who needs a worksheet? Yeah. It's on that piece of paper there. I got it on the screen there for those at home or wherever they might be on live stream. What I'm going to ask you to do is you know, how to talk about what I believe, my core Christian beliefs, what do I believe? And I helped you out a little bit because I gave you five topics, okay? So what I'm going to ask you to do is take a couple minutes and write out a simple one-line belief statement that you have for each of these five topics. No one's going to see it. No one's going to look over your shoulder and give you a plus or minus comment or mark on it. It's for you only. But I want you to write, just take a moment and write a simple faith statement or belief statement beside each one. And we'll come back in a second. So I realize that you may not be done yet, so take it home with you. You got a little bit of homework to do, okay? I'm curious, not about what you wrote, but how far you got into it. So if you have comments you want to relate to me afterwards, let me know about that. And as they say, if you're not completed yet, take it home. I mean, it's worth thinking about what you believe. I mean, how can you share what you believe with others if you don't know what it is that you actually believe? So, when I was around 22, I got my first job as a music director in a church. I'd applied to three churches at the same time, two United churches and one Lutheran church. And I had grown up United, and the two United churches didn't hire me. They said I was too young and didn't have enough experience. But the Lutheran church hired me. And I spent the next 10 or 12 years playing in the Lutheran church. And one of the things about the Lutheran church is that they recited the Apostles' Creed every Sunday in their service. I was kind of surprised by that because I'd never even heard of the Apostles' Creed before. I didn't know it even existed. But week after week, we recited it. Month after month, year after year. And I can tell you, having listened to the Apostles' Creed for 10 or 12 years every Sunday in church, that I had challenges along the way in reciting it. I mean, to be honest, at the very beginning, I wasn't even really a Christian. So that was a problem right there. But when I started developing that Christian instinct in me, I still had to put footnotes along the way as I said the creed. Like, for instance, I believe in God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. I had to footnote that. Because God is not male. God has no sex or gender. Yes, we can say Father, but sort of, maybe not. And the footnotes moved around, interestingly, over the months and years, from section to section. Different issues, different problems arose. I wrestled with different things. It probably took me at least 5 years before I could recite the Apostles' Creed in the Lutheran worship service without any little footnotes. It took me 5 years to get there, at least five. But remember, the Apostles' Creed is a simple summary of Christian teaching, of Christian beliefs. And we need primary material to work with. You need the Bible to give you the primary material. You need the creeds to help you along the way so you get the language you can have in order to be able to speak about what you believe. Otherwise, you're wandering around in your muddled intuitions, and that's not going to get you very far in life. The deepening of our journey with Jesus only comes as we take the primary material of our Christian tradition and we translate it into our own words. That's what needs to happen for us. We become awake to what we believe in a very personal way. Now, some of you might be saying to me, well, why do I need to put what I believe into my own words? And I can tell you one reason is that's how you grow in what you believe. If you can't articulate what you believe, you live at that subliminal level of your intuitions, but you can't grow in your understanding of what you believe. It's almost always better for you to be able to articulate in your own words what you believe. And it has to be your own words, otherwise you're not going to really understand what you're talking about. If you can put it in your own words, that means you know what the Christian teaching is about. And you will believe and you will have stronger clarity and greater conviction in what you believe. Another really important reason is that faith moves from one person to another. This church, Trillium, exists because people before us were able to share their faith with each other. They are able to share their faith one person to another, one invitation to another to join in that journey of faith with the Lord. That's how it works. That's how it's always worked. Jesus went along the shoreline and he called Peter and Andrew to him. Then he turned around and called James and John. He called a few disciples and then they called people and then they called people, and it's been rippling out for 2,000 years. That's why today the Christian faith has almost 3 billion people in it. 3 billion invitations along the way. We're never going to go anywhere as a congregation unless people in our church community know how to articulate their faith in their own words and invite others to join them in the journey of life, of eternal life. Churches grow when members of a congregation invite people to join them in the journey of faith, in the journey of faith. And that only happens when people are able to tell others about what they believe in their own words. Reciting the Apostles' Creed to some new person, sharing some Bible verse with somebody, that's probably not going to cut it in most cases. Your own testimony, your own witness, and your own words, your own experiences, that's what has power in conveying the gospel from one person to another. Paul, in his first letter to Timothy, his protege, was giving him some advice about how to conduct himself, how to lead the churches in Ephesus and around the city of Ephesus. And Paul, at the very end, in the passage that Katie read for us today, throws in a little creed that he made up himself. There are lots of little creeds in the New Testament as the church struggled to express what they learned from Jesus in their own words. He appeared in the flesh and was vindicated by the Spirit, was seen by angels, and preached among the nations, was believed on in the world, and was taken up in glory. Paul took basic Christian teaching, put it in his own words, and offered it to Timothy. And Paul, by example, is asking us to do the same thing. Take basic Christian teaching, put it into our own words. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It doesn't have to be studious. It doesn't have to be academic. It doesn't have to be bookish. God forbid that. Don't do that. Put it in your own simple words, the words that come from your heart and in your own voice. That's where the power of God is found today. Now, I don't know what you managed to get done on your little worksheet. How far did you get with it? But I can tell you this. Trillium will grow. Trillium will thrive as more of you learn how to express and share what you believe with others. It's really that simple.